stick him in a rear naked choke these days, man.
Yes.
Stick him, like, get a fucking arm.
I'd love
get
to.
Out, get a fucking nice arm bar and snap that fucking arm in half.
I would love to. I'd love to.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Listening to Sappening Podcast.
Sappening!
Sappening!
You are listening to episode 278 of Sappening Podcast, featuring myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend, Morgan Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards, and I know you're expecting puns, but too many times I've seen it rip a hole into our friendship. So I thought this would be a perfect gunshot to the head of trepidation.
It was a good first half, but you've tried too hard in the second half, I think. I'll be honest. But yes, this week, our guests are two of metal's finest. Tuck and Heafy, a.k.a. only to us, though. Nobody else has called him it yet. The Matt. Yes, we've got Matt Tuck of Bullet for My Valentine and Axe Wound, and the awesome Matt Heafy of Trivium and Ibaraki.
Matt versus Matt. Talk about two inspirational and genre-defining vocalists for a whole generation. Now, if you haven't been on the internet for the last couple of weeks, and I wouldn't blame you, it can be very toxic, you would have missed the announcement of a genuine dream tour where Bullet for My Valentine and Trivium are both celebrating the 20th anniversaries of their international breakthrough albums, Oof. The Poison and Ascendancy,
Ooh.
On a joint co-headline run across UK arenas to kick off 2025. Now, this is absolutely class. These are two records that have no doubt soundtracked a lot of people's growing up in the scene for many, many years. And what was cool, we first saw the news about this during our travels in Miami, right? I had a lot of messages of people being like, oh my God, check this out. We need to go and all this. Awesome. Very excited about it. We got back a couple of days later. I received a message from one Matthew Tuck asking if we wanted him and Heafy to come on together and talk all about it. So that's a mad sentence in itself. Both have been on before. We've had some great conversations and laughs with them. But it's so special when we get to join two worlds, join two bands and two inspirational characters together on this podcast.
Yes, this was a lovely, fantastic chat with the Mats. We cover everything from beginnings to weird shows. We have a big Limp Bizkit chat that I enjoyed a bit, obviously, because, love them and this is a fantastic, fantastic chat that we are very, very grateful for. So thank you very much to Matt Tuck for reaching out personally, because we didn't get invited to the London Press Day.
Hey.
I remember years and years ago seeing Bullet for My Valentine, slightly just pre-Bullet for My Valentine, when they were called Jeff Kiljohn. Actually, I think I saw them in the Cardiff Barfly once when they were called Opportunity in Chicago, which Ooh. Was the brief name they had between Jeff Kiljohn and Bullet for My Valentine. I saw them play Cardiff Barfly, I saw him play the Vic in Pontypridd, and they had Gavin Burrows, who's in Funeral for a Friend, was playing guitar, and they covered Davidian by Machine Head. So that tells you how long ago it was. But to see a band go from the Vic in Pontypridd to now possibly their fastest ever sellout Cardiff Arena show is absolutely amazing, especially after 20 plus years of them being a band. So yes, this is a fantastic full circle fun chat with two guys who have played bigger parts than I think they know in the metal scene.
Yeah, well, it goes without saying how Bullet and Trivium are just absolute legendary acts who have inspired a whole new level of people in metal today and beyond. And these albums really have stood the test of time, and it's mad that they're celebrating two decades of them now in 2025. And as you said, throughout this, we talk about so much, from how this tour happened and some secret plans to the nostalgia and impact of these songs, the weird parallels between both of the bands really trying to break out in 2005, which was considered a weird time in alternative music, and some maybe one or two exclusives of details they probably shouldn't have told us, but oops, we lever all the less. Tour tickets are selling stupidly fast. That's why we wanted to get this out as soon as we could. Before you miss out on the chance to go, head over to either band's websites and socials for the dates. And while you're checking that out, head over to @SapningPod on Instagram and the app formerly known as Twitter. Give us a follow, give us a like, share this, tell us you're listening to it, put it in your Instagram stories. We can share and have a great laugh. And go and check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/Sapning for the best people you will ever meet.
Yes, yes, we will. Look, here's a question to get involved in our socials.
Ooh.
Who do you think owns the most sleeveless shirts? Is it Matt Ify or is it Matt Tuck? And also, where do you think they keep those sleeves? I like to think they've got a big drawer or a closet, as the Americans call it. That's literally just chock-a-block with sleeves. There you go. That's it. Let's do the episodes, eh? Sapning! Oh my god, I'm going mad, man.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Sapning!
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 Yes!
Yes, yes, why yes? I can't believe it. This is the first time we've kind of done like a multi-international band get-together. This is fucking mad. This is the first time we've ever done this.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, this week's guest, Matt Heafy and Matt Tuck of the brilliant Bullet for My Valentine. Well, I've done it the wrong order, haven't I? Matt Ify of Trivium and obviously Matt Tech of the brilliant Bullet for My Valentine. Lads, how are you?
Fantastic. Thank you so much for having us. I was just so the viewers can catch up too. America has a time change that's 2 weeks earlier than Europe and the UK. And it's ridiculous. So I was like, all right, Tuck, I'll see you in an hour and a half. It's like 2 hours and a half. I was like, wait a second. I looked it up. I was like, damn it. I can't believe it happened again. The only time this ever seems to happen is during this time zone change. And anytime I talk to anyone in California, I feel like every human being that lives in California does not care what time zone it is for every other country, every other state, whatever time it is in California, that's all that matters. So anyway, I digress. Here we are.
Yes. No, thank you for being here. Thank you for being here. Has there been constant long gaps between these chats you've been doing with people?
Good question. I guess the last one would have been the press conference itself in London. So that was, I think, 2 weeks ago.
Oh,
so yeah, we'll start getting some more. Yeah, I think that was the last one.
I think we kind of did it all in one night. You know what I mean? I think that was kind of the point. And the way we did it is so we could just do it in one big chunk and not get too overwhelmed by the people that wanted to talk about it. But here we are, you know, and like I said, last time we spoke, I think it was 2000 Trees, and we promised we would do it again soon. So here we are.
Yeah.
Thanks for doing it.
Thank you very much. And yeah, thank you for reaching out to us to do this. We would have loved to have been invited to the press conference in London.
I sent you the invite, man. Where'd it go?
I wrote
you an invite. I sent it to you.
Well,
I sent it by carrier pigeon, though, so I'm not sure if it made it over there.
Do you know what? We've just had 2 weeks of British carrier pigeon shooting going on. So maybe that's what it was. Maybe that's what it was.
Nice microphone, by the way. Nice Elgato right there.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Yeah, we've got the same hookup. We had the same hookup.
Kate's the greatest. I love her so much. She's amazing.
She's fantastic. No, but we were in Miami when you did the London one.
That was true. That's true. So it would have been a bit of a commute for us, but... Wait, we're here now. That's all that matters.
Yes.
It's even better because you got us all to yourselves, boys. So you've actually won. So
yeah, exactly. Yep. You know. Exactly. Don't have to share a room with other journalists. Exactly.
Scum, as I call them. Subhuman scum. And I can say it because I just did. So they
actually got other. I can't.
That'll be
the clickbait title to this podcast. And it'll be
Matt Heafy calls all journalists scum. Oh, great. Thank you. See you later, boys. That'll do. We've got enough.
Be the most popular one. Most probably.
No, guys, I mean, obviously, there's been so much excitement these last few weeks since you've announced this co-headline tour together and going to be playing these albums in full and just celebrating 20 years of some iconic releases for the two of you. How has it been since just kind of... reflect on the announcement, seeing the reaction, and just knowing that you guys are going to be spending a lot of time together?
It's been amazing, man. You know, we knew it was something that the fans of our bands were going to love. We knew it was going to go down well. You know, we had that, just kind of knew. You know, those two albums, especially from both our bands, they just came at such an important and the right time, you know, for heavy metal music in general. And this far down the road now, we can fully appreciate the impact that those albums actually did have, you know, because at the time you're just in it, you're living it, you're enjoying it, you're just riding the wave. So yeah, it's been crazy, man. The reaction's been phenomenal. The tickets have just flown out. There's talks behind the scenes about kind of adding more venues and stuff. It's just crazy, man. It's just been amazing. It's just been such a beautiful, humbling experience, even this far down the journey, you know. It's feels good, man. We're just so happy that everyone is excited as we are about the tour. It's great, man.
Yeah, it's incredible. Just like Matt said, it's something that went by so quickly that for all these years, I've always said, I wish I sat back and smelled the roses a little bit more on that tour. I wish I sat back and watched and was able to enjoy it. But honestly, it was enjoyable where we were, but we had to put that time in. What's going to be amazing is now the record is done. We've done the tours. Both of our bands are better than ever because every show we've played individually has made us a better band. We've gotten better and better each time. So that means this material is going to sound the best it's ever sounded. And anyone that was there gets to relive that. Anyone that wasn't there gets to live it for the first time. I chatted to someone who was born in 2003, which blows my mind. And they're like, oh, Ascendancy and the Poison are two of my favorite records ever. I wish I could have been there. I was like, damn, 2003. Like, that record came out like 2 years after that. So it's amazing. It's going to be this multi-generational thing. It's going to be beautiful. Like Matt said, the tickets have been flying. I could not believe, like, I think Manchester tickets were something like, it's like 6,000 tickets in like just over 24 hours, which is absurd. Yeah. That's incredible in over 24 hours. So I'm so excited. It's going to be amazing.
But as you said there, I think like these last 20 years have shown how just insane things have gotten for both of your bands, but especially around these album cycles back in 2005 in particular. everything kicked off so much that it's hard to take the moment in because you're being pulled in all many directions. You're getting on a plane to go somewhere else and doing all these tours, all these appearances, everything like that. So it kind of just gets away from you. So it must be kind of a weird sense of like humbling and just kind of nostalgia, being able to reflect on all this now and see how far the band has come, see how far you've all grown as individuals, and even just look back at like old photos and just the memories attached to these songs.
Yeah, you just hit the nail on the head there about how we feel, you know, and time has gone by so quick. I think that the scary thing about it is how fast time has gone, you know. All the periods in between the albums and the tours have all been amazing, and they all mark a moment in time for both our bands. But to actually like stop for a minute and actually take a look back at what we did back then and to understand of how long time has gone, you know, how long it's been. Like 20 years is a long time, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
You know, it's something that I think both of us haven't really kind of paid attention to because we've just been doing our thing. We've just been enjoying life, enjoying playing music, being in a band, continuing our journeys musically. And yeah, like you said, Morgan, to step back now and enjoy it. You know, we were being pulled in every single direction. There was no stopping anything at the time. We were riding such a tsunami of a wave that, you know, I think it wasn't until after a kind of fever, I think, that things actually slowed down for Bullet personally. You know, it was just a crazy, crazy time. And we were so young, so naive, had no experience of doing that professionally. And for things to happen that quickly and that big off a debut album, it's pretty mad. It doesn't happen a lot. It really doesn't. You know, it happens to some bands, maybe second, third, fourth album. But on your debut, pretty fucking wild, man.
Yeah, the stories of both bands, of Bullet and Trivium, it's stuff you almost can't replicate. Like, you can't look at other bands and go, wow, those paths were similar. The only band we've ever shared a similar path to is Bullet. And I found so much comfort in that, like, being able to hear and see Matt talk about, like, quotes that he said that made magazine titles, that made people kind of, like, look at him, like, in a questioning way. The same thing happened to me. And there's no one else that I can relate to in that way, which is such a nice thing. It's a comforting thing. It feels as if we're, you know, two bands that are becoming one band for this tour, one band for this 1 year to do and have a common goal. We get to play bigger venues, be more comfortable, play in front of more of our fans and play one of their favorite records. We had a moment, it was right, I think, when we finished Silence in the Snow, which is our seventh record, where it's not that I forgot Ascendancy, because we played Ascendancy stuff live since then, but it was, I remember I was talking to someone during an interview and they brought up Ascendancy, it was like the 15 year. So it would have been 2015. And I almost forgot that we did that record. It's like, oh yeah, Ascendancy. We did that. I was like 18, 17 years old, all these things that happened. So it's great that we get to have that. Cause I remember saying to him, I wish I could have enjoyed that a little bit more because it went so quickly. We were so wrapped up in the tides of it. And here we are now. It was amazing to be in Orlando with Matt and to go through all the magazines that every single magazine had Bullet on the cover. Trivium was the special feature. Every single cover that had Trivium on the cover, it was Bullet as a special feature. Wow. It was like predestined. It was like foreshadowing what was going to happen 20 years from then.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy, really. That's very strange.
I love how you've kind of got these two bands mirrored with their history together, but one's from Bridgend and one's from America. Like, it's like during, it's even international waters in between you guys, but you have so many nuances and shared stories, and just your approach to the scene, I think, is being well documented as being those hungry kids when you were first on the covers of Kerrang, on the covers of Metal Hammer, trying to break through and trying to do something different, but kind of at the same time, you had the kind of the same mindset.
Yeah, it's eerily similar, the path and the journey that both bands have experienced, you know, and we talked about it when I went over to Orlando at the beginning of the year just to hang out and do some content and stuff. But, you know, it's only when we have those moments of reflection and can sit down together and reflect together that we understood kind of like this kind of, I don't know, path that we took and the journey that we took was just, is identical. It's so weird. Even the people we've worked with, the people that have done production and mixing and like everything's the same.
Both our names, we're both Matt. We both play guitar, sing and scream, both play rhythm, lead, sing, scream. That's so rare.
Yeah.
You don't meet other Matts in other metal bands, but they're usually just the singer or it's someone that, like, you know, it's that combination is just, it's uncanny. It's amazing.
Yeah. You talked there about, almost be in the same band. Is there any chance of a crossover on this tour? Are you going to do songs with each other potentially?
I'm sure there'll be all sorts of fun stuff coming up. You know, we've been talking too about doing an original It was kind of like in the headspace, written of ascendancy, having Matt and Padge on there. I think it'd be incredible. Because now we can do that. Now that we're celebrating this record from 20 years ago, we can dive and be like, all right, this song's going to sound as if they were on that record, or see how that evolves. And to do Tears in Orlando was incredible. That was so much fun for me.
That was awesome. Watch that video. Yeah. So when you look back at these songs, do you ever think of new bits for the songs, or do you ever think of how you would change it now, or how today's Matt would have written it? Is there anything different in those songs now?
Personally, no. I think they are what they are. You know, after each album, as a writer, I just like to move on to the next. You know, I don't kind of look back too much. Kind of always live in the moment. The song is what it is because it is for that moment, and you move on. You know, you go down that road, it's going to be a lot of time dwelling on things you could have done differently or better, or however you want to come across it. But I think the beauty about those albums was kind of the naivety of the writing. You know, you weren't writing for fans. You weren't writing for success. You know, it was just a bunch of songs you accumulated with your best friends as a kid, because you liked playing guitar in a band with your mates. You know, there was no bullshit attached to it. And there's a nice kind of fearless naivety to a debut album from any band. That is the most pure representation of who you are. You know, everything after that, you're always second guessing. Oh, what if we do this? What if it's like that? What should we do differently? Oh, the fans might not like this, or the press is going to kill us for this. You know, there's none of that on a debut, you know? So for me, I think I wouldn't change a fucking thing, man. I think the album is what it is, and that's why people love it, you know?
I'm into that. Agreed. I did try some experimenting. Like, I remember when I quit screaming again, I didn't have a plan for the ascendancy stuff, but I sang over the ascendancy stuff with no plan whatsoever. So that kind of was like a little rocky. I used to do way too many dive bombs when I had the Floyd Rose on my guitar. So I kind of tried the stuff. I was like, no, let's go back to the original.
Do you guys remember the first time you met each other or became aware of the other's band?
Yeah, both. I remember both of those things. I remember the first time I heard about the band Trivium and listened to the music. And I remember the first time when I met Matt and Corey as well. So first time I heard them was I was given Ascendancy by our agent at the time, who had a copy just as it was dropping. And he said, hey, check these guys out. They're from Orlando. They're like 17 years old. I was like, okay, cool. And this is when we were recording The Poison. So we were kind of in the thick of making our debut album. And then I got given this CD, stuck it on. And my reaction was literally like, oh, fuck. Because it was just so good. It was so polished. It was so technical. It was exactly kind of the music that my ears had wanted to hear for so long, coming out of like 10 years of new metal kind of stuff, you know? And to know that the fact that the boys were still in school and teenagers while they made this was like, fuck, man, these guys are something special, you know? So I remember that very clearly. And then the first time I met Matt and Corey was behind the second stage at Rock and Ring, I think in 2005, in the summer of 2005, just before The Poison came out. Ascendancy has already just been released. And we just bumped into each other backstage and just went over to Matt and said, hey, man, I'm Matt from Bullet. I fucking love your band, man. And he was like, oh, thanks, man. You know, thanks for bigging us. Because at the time as well, I was kind of bigging it up in Kerrang. And, you know, I was telling the press, they were like, oh, so who you been listening to lately? And I was like, there's this new band from fucking Florida called Trivium. They're going to be massive. And they were like, okay. And I was wearing like the t-shirt in press photos and stuff like that. So it was cool. You know, I just had a connection to what they were making musically and was a fan ever since.
Thank you so much, Matt. I remember when I saw that picture of Matt wearing the Trivium shirt, we all freaked out. I first heard Bullet on the EP before The Poison, and we're huge fans of Colin Richardson. Obviously, both bands are. And we heard that, oh yeah, you know, Colin's gonna start working with these guys. We listened to the EP. My mind was blown. I was like, holy cow, there's this band that's also young that's playing metal. Because when we first came out in Orlando, Orlando's the land of pop punk, ska, and boy bands. I'm not knocking any of those things. Like, I think there's some great boy band stuff out there. We were like one of the few metal bands always out of there. And it always felt like an us v them. We didn't have any commonality with other bands that came up out of our scene. There wasn't really a scene for us because people talk about death metal. That was like 1991 to 1997 in Tampa, which is 2 hours south of me. So we weren't involved in anything coming up. To feel that camaraderie already just from hearing their music before even meeting them, I was like, this is amazing. Hearing a band using similar tools to us, I'm like, oh wow, they must have liked this record that like we liked as well. And hearing that was amazing to me. So we all became fans of theirs. I was actually asked in Kerrang to talk about Bullet. So I made like a couple paragraphs about Bullet as well. We need to find that magazine somewhere. And then when I saw Matt in the shirt, was blown away. We got to meet there. Remember, we did the Metal Hammer Awards together. It was 2006, I think, as well, maybe 2007. So we've always been able to bump each other and see each other here and there, but never done a proper full-length tour.
Mm.
So really amazing stuff, yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. You've never toured together.
We've done like 2.5-3 weeks in the States between fests, but never a proper thing together.
And it just feels like it was always the obvious one to do. But you know, both our bands were just doing our own thing, you know, and why wouldn't we? You know, it was kind of the time was never right, and the tours never came to fruition, you know. But it's almost better that it's taken 20 years for this to happen, because I think, you know, it's the most obvious thing, and we've made people wait so long that. And to celebrate, obviously, two albums as well. It's not just a tour either. It's the coming together as a co-headline to celebrate a 20-year career this far of two very special records. You know, so this, the stars have aligned, and I'm glad it's taken this long, because I just think it's made it such more of an event and a special moment for the genuine fans that want to come and hang out with us, you know?
Absolutely. And both of our bands have never done the tour where we're playing an entire record from start to finish. We've done, you know, shows here and there, but never full tours. And we've done numerous co-headlines all around the world with different amazing bands, and they've always done well. But Bullet was always the one we felt, if we ever did a co-headline with Bullet, it would make more sense than anything else. And so to be able to do that, I feel like Bullet plus Trivium is 1 + 1 = 3. And then us both doing our big records is 1 + 1 = 5 on this one. That's what I've been saying.
Nice.
Well, yeah, I've seen people just react into it straight away and just like freaking out and wanting to relive 2005. I saw people already being like, I've already booked a babysitter. Don't worry. Like, they just want to really dive back into those days. And that must just be so nice to see as well, that it's becoming an event, not just, oh, that's a show I definitely need to go to. It's one of like, oh my God, these are like two things I really want to enjoy, because you've probably noticed this. There's such a crossover between your audiences. Like, I'm sure playing shows, you've seen the other band's t-shirts in the front row millions of times.
Yeah. It's something that, like I said, it's taken this long to get here, but it's going to be worth it. And also, you know, it does feel like it's an actual event. It's not just a tour, you know, it feels like it's an event, you know. And to kind of hit the venues that we're going to be hitting in the UK and ending at the O2 in London, that's blowing my mind. You know, it's something that we've always felt like someday we could get there, you know. And I've always backed the band, I've always believed in myself, and it's the one like UK and London venue that has eluded us for the last 20 years, and we finally get to tick it off and in a beautiful celebratory fashion with another band that totally deserve it. And it's gonna be a special tour, man. I'm just so excited for it, you know. I haven't been this excited to do a tour in a long time, and that's crazy because I don't have to write any music for it. It's already done.
definitely a plus.
Yeah, it's like, definitely a plus. To do anything. This is great.
It's amazing. I think that us climbing the O2 has to be a good omen. That has to be. And especially when we're local, we used to say every time we play a local show, we start loading up our trucks and our sedans to go play at a bar in front of 10 people. It would always start raining, and we'd always consider that a good luck sign. Like, oh, it's raining, we're about to go do a show. And as soon as we started climbing the O2, we started hailing, and we climbed the whole thing while it was hailing in like the, you know, 25, 30 degree Fahrenheit weather. It's like, this has got to be a good sign. And I truly believe so.
Yeah. Everybody else is like, fuck this. No, let's get down. It's no, we all did it. Yeah. We're all going to fall. Yeah,
maybe a good sign for you, Matthew, but it's
for us, bro. Yeah, it's a fucking shaking.
Fucking freezing.
As well, speaking of it becoming an event, it actually starts in Cardiff on my birthday. So guys, didn't have to go to all that effort just for me, but I do appreciate it.
You're more than welcome.
We're going to put you in a giant cake. You're going to bust out of it.
Oh, God, don't. His fucking ego's getting enough of this, boys. We don't need this. Can you change your date? Can you change your date? Is it too late? Can we cancel our...
Oh, what's cool about you mentioning if this being an event as well, as we've seen, all four of us have seen nowadays, how much heavy music and different music is being embraced on social media.
Hmm.
So amazing now is to see all these creators making things of the Poison and Ascendancy right now, as if it's a new record. I'm seeing all these, I saw a weatherman quoting Trivium while he was on like local news, and I'm seeing like content creators cover both of our songs. It's really cool to see something 20 years ago, we didn't even know what TikTok was going to be. Instagram was going to be, all it was MySpace really back then, MySpace and Facebook. To see that kind of internet zeitgeist picking up on this whole thing right now, it's all signs are leading that this is the right move.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be huge. And yeah, as we said earlier, it's nearly nearly all sold out. So yeah, it's gonna be it's gonna be fantastic. When are you gonna start rehearsing for those shows?
I think it's kind of already begun behind the scenes individually. You know, it's just trying to get your head into like, okay, what can we, well, for us especially, you know, we're gonna be doing something as well that we've never done before on the tour, which we haven't announced yet. You know, we didn't want to say anything until later down the road. But yeah, we're just kind of getting the headspace into, right, okay, how are we going to do back to front as it is chronologically? Are we going to mix it up a little bit, play all the songs, but maybe do it in a rejigged fashion? So in a set list, it might flow better in a live environment. There's lots to think about. But yeah, I think, you know, everyone's just trying to get their headspace into, right, okay. Because the Poison's quite a long record as well. It's not like these days when it's like 8 to 10, it's like 16 songs or something with all the bits and bobs at the end. So. Yeah, there's going to be a lot to revisit, you know, a lot of stuff we haven't done for a very, very, very long time. So yeah, it's going to be, the sooner we start, the better it'll be. And I know Matt's been doing stuff on his channels as well, like playing all the stuff from Ascendancy, getting his shit together. So yeah, man, it's going to be fun. It's going to be cool.
Constant conditioning. Yep. All individually as well. And then we're going to get together as a band. I'm not sure when we're going to start reuniting as a band. Probably soon, I imagine. A couple times a week. Got the hanger. Yeah. So just staying conditioned. It's a lot of screaming. So I'm making sure I got that conditioning down.
A lot of screaming, a lot of solos everywhere. Just like,
yes,
yes.
lots.
But when you, when you get back into that mindset of revisiting these songs now, I'm sure that like the younger you is very present of being like, oh, I remember where I was when this lyric happened or when this part was made and stuff like that. With the fact that like hindsight is 2020 is probably one of the best things. Do you remember like any little details about like, oh, what younger you was trying to achieve and like can kind of reflect on that a bit more now or kind of understand stuff or kind of just see how far maybe an idea which you weren't sure about back then actually came to fruition and how like you've done stuff along the way that has helped those things or have just picked up lessons from early years?
What's amazing about looking at the process now that we do, and I think Matt and I both alluded to this during some of the press, is it when we made those records, we just went to make what we wanted to make. We made what we wanted to hear as a band. We made exactly what we wanted to hear, not thinking, is anyone like this or just like this? Never calculating, we need a song like this or something like that, just going for it. What's amazing is the last three records for us, Sin, Dead Men, and Dragon, the writing process, the creative process, everything we did in Ascendancy is the way we're doing it now. Just freely, no rules, no restraints, no walls, just make the kind of stuff that the four of us want to hear, regardless of what anyone else in the world might think. And that was that innocence, that naivety, that lightning in a bottle of Ascendancy, and I believe with the Poison.
Yeah, same thing. You know, we you know, if I'm 100% honest, we didn't really know what the fuck was going on. You know what I mean? It was just chaos. We were just a band from the valleys, you know what I mean? And all of a sudden got this opportunity to go in a studio with this producer whose music we'd listened to forever, some of our favorite bands. And, you know, we had a bunch of songs demoed and written and ready to go, but, you know, I'd say probably 30, 40% of the album, we just had to do it on the fly. You know, we just kind of were like, shit, we need more stuff. We only had about 6-7 songs, you know what I mean? But we had to write an album. So it was like, fuck. So I do remember having kind of like panicky anxiety moments, but I also remember having amazing, like kind of free flowing creative moments, like Suffocating Under Words of Sorrow just came out on like a Tuesday night or about 11 PM after a bottle of wine. Yeah. And it was just, again, it was just kind of, it was naivety, but it was also like that fearless kind of, and fearless thing that I personally had always had is like, you know, I kind of thrive under pressure. And I think at the time I didn't know it, obviously, because it was so new, but just having that kind of, you have to do this now. This is it. You're in a studio. You've got 5-6 songs, which are great, but we need 12, 15. And it was just get your head down, go, just let the creative juices just rip, you know? So it was a weird, wonderful time making that album because we knew the songs that we had were special. We had like Tears, All These Things, Her Voice Resides. You know, we had a bunch of good shit. We know this stuff is going to be mega. But we just didn't have enough. And like I said, we were writing on the fly in the studio at night and not telling anyone. There was some percentage of blagging going on for sure.
that's how Sabbath did Paranoid. Like they were in the studio and they're like, we need more songs. Like, well, we don't have any more songs. They jammed in 15 minutes. They had Paranoid. So it was like one of those. That's what your story made me think of.
Yeah, and you know, it's like under pressure, you know, if you back yourself and you're confident enough under pressure, some amazing things could happen in life in general, I think, you know, not just in music, but yeah, it was a wild time. It was exciting. It was scary, but there were, you know, there was nothing that was going to stop us achieving that goal. And I think all that madness and chaos and naivety and fearlessness mashed up into this mad ball of energy, and just boom, that's what the poison was, you know, and is.
Yeah. It's so mad, isn't it? Like how just a snapshot moment of creativity out of the blue can have that place in your career for 20 years. Like, there's no other job, I don't think, where like you do something at the spur of the moment to try and get done whatever you're getting done that you have to live with. And it's weird how I'm sure there's bits of these songs that you absolutely love, and I'm sure there's bits of the songs you kind of don't and kind of wish you could rewrite and stuff in some ways. But yeah, it just must be mad to have that hindsight and just to think, wow, that one little moment I took having to do this has stuck with us for 2 decades.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I was in Wales 3 days ago at my parents' place. I went to Padgett to do some writing. Just sporadically, you know, I was like, I'm going to Wales for the weekend. We're going to do some writing. So I went to Wales and I've come back with potentially the first song off whatever the next record may be.
Wow.
And I was actually taking my son Evan to school this morning and he was listening to it in the car. And I literally said that to him. So I said, imagine if I didn't go to Wales this weekend, this wouldn't exist. So yeah, that is, you know, that happens all the time in writing music. You know, it's like, if I hadn't gone to Wales, this song wouldn't exist and no one would ever hear it. And then it wouldn't just exist. It is crazy. But all those moments are just part of that, like taking the moment to feel when it feels right to be creative. You know, I'm very much, I listen to my body and my mind, and I don't sit down every day and write. It's like when I feel like I want to and I'm in the mood, I'll go and do something, and usually something cool comes out that people will eventually hear about 18 months later. And to know that and to kind of have the foresight to that, it is a pretty weird feeling.
I love it. I love being in a trade that we could do exactly that, exactly what Matt said, exactly what you said, Morgan. I feel it's probably visual artists, auditory artists, maybe chefs, filmmakers, things like that, when you're creating something in that moment. I remember a story that Matt's story reminded me of. I was listening to Danny Elfman's masterclass, or watching Danny Elfman's masterclass. He was talking about, he met with the director of Batman, Tim Burton. Yeah, Tim Burton. And he was flying back and he kept having songs in his head popping up. He's like, I have to track this now, or I'm going to forget it. And nowadays we can play it on a keyboard on our phone and screen record it. He only had a tape recorder. So he kept going to the bathroom to record himself singing. And he kept going back and forth as he was coming with this thing. And after like 10 or so visits, the flight attendants were like, are you okay? What are you doing? You can't keep doing this. No, he's like, no, I'm fine. I'm just recording the song. So when he landed, he played it. But oh, you hear all this plane noise. The plane noise is like louder than the melody, but he can hear the melody slightly underneath that. But that's how he came with that Batman melody. And it's such an amazing thing that it's, you really have to capture lightning in a bottle. I am so right brain in everything I do. I like to wake up at the same time every day, eat at the same time every day, do all these things. My dad's a Marine. So it's like, I don't know if I want to do that. I'm just trained to do that. that Marine and Japanese side are so regimented. So I'm so regimented in absolutely everything I do. But when it comes down to writing music, I need to disconnect, forget everything, and just let true creativity be captured. And if it's not, I have to stop. That's why everything I do in life that I like has those moments, like grappling and jujitsu. You can't think. If you think, you lose. So you have to be so trained and so in that moment that you forget about everything. Same thing with live shows. I try to make it where the reason why year round, I never stop practicing individually, like on Twitch, is so when I walk up on stage, I can stop thinking, which is almost completely a contradiction to the way I like to train everything. But it's so cool that the processes that in which we get to create for our living, it could be something so instantaneous and something you could just truly grab like a lightning in a bottle.
Mm. Do you think that mindset of doing all the pre-work to go on stage to not think has really let you enjoy these gigs and enjoy taking everything in a little bit longer? Because as we mentioned at the beginning, you know, you guys, both of your bands, have been pulled in so many different directions. You've had to do so many things that it can just feel like, okay, yeah, it's another gig or whatever. But it does sound like there's certain moments now that are just as exciting as day one.
Massively. I think about that first download performance. I was hungover nose was bloody. I was cold. My fingers weren't working. I was 18 and stupid and standing there at the biggest stage we were ever about to walk up into my entire life. And I couldn't even sing a note. And I walked up, adrenaline blacked out, walked off stage. And everyone said, that was the greatest show you've ever done. And I said to myself, I was like, I cannot live like this anymore. I need to not feel that ever again and be extremely prepared. So luckily, bands like Bullet and Trivium realized that thing. And you see the bands that didn't. You see, you know it. You see it.
Yeah.
I think that comes with experience as well, to enter that flow state. You know, that's kind of what I search for on a tour. Is I don't want, like Matt just said, I don't want to be thinking. I don't want to be feeling nerves. I just want to be, just be in present. That moment and almost like, yeah, present, but also kind of part of the show. I don't want to be the front man. I want to be part of the entire thing, you know? So when I come off stage and I can't really remember the show and I feel like I've entered that kind of free flow state and I feel like I've been part of something rather than performing for people, I also want to be there performing for me. And it's like this whole thing of energy, you know? So that's what I kind of strive for these days as well. But that takes experience, you know, that takes being on the stage a lot and understanding how to achieve that. And like Matt said, that's just, it's knowing what you need to do. It's not overthinking things. It's controlling anxiety and nerves, you know, owning that shit, you know? And yeah, I think that comes with experience and 20 years. We should have that by now. So
yeah, it's that, what, it's not 10,000 hours. We've probably done what, 20, 30, 50,000 hours.
Yeah, it's more enjoyable like that. You know, some people might think that coming off stage and not really feeling 100% present is like not enjoyable. For me, it is, because that's when I know I've had like a moment that my body and my mind were just doing what they needed to do and were part of something, rather than I'm singing this song and this is how it should be sing. And here comes the chorus. Oh, what's that riff? You know, fuck that. I don't want to be, anything to do with that, man. I want to switch your brain off. And I think that comes, like I said, it comes with time, experience, practice, dedication, and entering that state is a beautiful thing. Really is a nice feeling, you know?
That's my favorite place in the world, Low Mind. That is my favorite thing. And it's hard to find, but when you find it, it's just so enjoyable.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Who first mentioned the possibility of this tour happening?
This guy.
Nice. So happy.
Yeah. Well, it was just something, like I said, that we wanted to tour together properly forever. It, you know, the stars didn't align for whatever reason, for scheduling and stuff like that, you know, and both bands are headline bands in their own right. So there's no reason that it would happen this far down the road unless it was something like this. So, you know, we knew we wanted to do something special to celebrate a 20 year anniversary of a debut album. And it was not just a debut for us either. You know, it's a very special thing. You know, every debut album is kind of special, but the impact this had on our lives, it had on the music scene, we felt it deserved to have a time in the spotlight temporarily again, you know, before we start our next chapter of the next 20 years, you know? And we just felt like who would be the perfect band to do this with? Not just us, but another band that is, and we were like, oh, fucking hell, it's been there all along. It's been there all along. So yeah, management reached out to the Trivium guys, kind of floated the idea, and instantly the boys were in. And it was easy as that. Yeah.
Wow. I believe my exact response was, fuck yeah. About it. And yeah, rest is history.
Yeah. You know, and like I said, we knew it was going to do well. And then obviously when the tickets were released on the pre-sale last Wednesday and then general sale Friday, and I think we're on about 96% sold out.
Wow.
Like, within like 48 hours, it was like, fuck. Okay.
And that's cool. Just the UK too. We got a whole other rest of the planet to announce, and that thing's going to go off too.
Ooh. Oh, wow.
Yeah. The UK is massive, but I think South America is going to be absolutely insane. I think Canada's going to be huge. Europe's going to be huge. America's going to be huge. It's going to be great.
Yeah, everything's being lined up behind the scenes, and we're going to be dropping all the tours, staggering it throughout the year. You know, once the dust has settled on certain territories, we're going to drop the next one, and it's just going to snowball until the end of 2025. It's going to be a full 12 month kind of world tour vibe going on, you know?
Oh, you're going to be fucking sick of each other.
Nah, man, yeah. We're going to be happy. We're going to be happy because Bullet plus Trivium equals bigger venues, more comfortable, easier ways to travel, more accommodations, more stage space. That's what it means.
That's true,
because we're teaming up together. It's going to be bigger and better.
Yeah, and big up to the Welsh boys and girls as well for selling out the show in like 24 hours. Fucking,
that was fast.
Thank you, man.
Oh, we don't fuck about. We don't fuck about.
Yeah, you know, everywhere else is really close behind, but, you know, fucking go on, Wales.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I was going to say, Heafy, after all this time touring with Bullet, you're going to have a bit of Welsh accent for some words by the end of
it. I might. I need to learn some of the like the classic Welsh language. That's what I want to learn. I know little bits of everything.
Start using the word tidy instead of good. That's good. That's tidy, right? Tidy.
Like that. Yeah,
please
like that.
Start
like
doing it.
It's like the Zoomer kids say something's clean.
Kind of.
Yeah.
And the letter H doesn't exist, Matt. So just take the H off everything and that's a good
one. Yeah. Well. Matt Afy. Matthew Afy.
Just at the front. Otherwise it won't work, Matthew.
Oh, okay.
Tidy.
Don't worry. We'll Welsh the fuck out of you soon.
Yeah, please do. Please do.
Yeah, you'd have to spell a trevium, T-R-E-F-I-U-M, I-W-M,
Well, the chants all over the world are, like, always different, and in Spain it's trivium, and then, like, Germany, you heard, like, the German R, Japan, you heard the Japanese L, like, L-R thing, yeah, I like that, it's always good.
Mad.
But from a fan's point of view, I think it's so refreshing seeing two bands like yourselves do a tour like this together, because, you know...
Yep.
There's so many things going on at the moment, and as you're both aware, nostalgia is so celebrated these years. There's always a tour, there's always other shows going on. So from the fans' point of view, getting to see their two favorite bands at the same show is quite refreshing. Are you surprised like more bands aren't doing this and really combining each other as a package? Do you think like this is probably something we're going to see a lot more of in the future?
Mm. I think it has started, right? We've seen quite a lot over the last 12 months. The nostalgia thing is starting to become a lot more popular. But people like that because it reminds them of something, whether it's their youth, whether it's you know, it's just that whole nostalgia thing. It's just a beautiful thing to go and have that moment to enjoy it again. And, you know, I think a lot of bands don't do it like we've done it because, as we know in this industry, there's a lot of fucking ego flying around, you know what I mean? So to get two bands to kind of come together and do everything just down the middle, it takes a certain character of people in those bands to kind of come to terms with that and accept it and actually be happy about it. So I think that's probably been a big sticking point for a lot of bands doing this as a team, is the actual realities of doing this and having to kind of understand that on certain nights and certain territories, you ain't closing that show, but that's not what this tour is for us. And I don't care if we're closing a show or Trivium does, you know, we're just going to do it as fairly and as equally as possible. And it's not an indication of where the bands are at. This is just purely a celebration of what this tour is all about, you know? So I think, you know, it doesn't matter to us that side of it. You know, we've still got to understand and kind of decide who is doing what, but it's not a problem. But like I said, I think it takes certain type of characters of people to make this go smoothly and without any kind of toys being thrown out of prams, you know? So. And that's why I think it works for us, because we're very chilled. We're just basically like chilled out entertainers.
Fantastic bit of Brent.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we've done some tours where we've supported Co's and seen the opposite, where it's just this every single day, and you feel it, and it drips downwards into everything and everyone.
Yeah, we've heard it from people that we've worked with as well that. It's always good on paper, and then the tour starts, and then it's just fucking chaos for month after month, and everyone hates it. And, you know, so we're like, yeah, we don't want to go down that road. So,
nah, luckily, we're long as we got good food, I'm happy. Yeah, that's all I need. Give me that good food.
Yeah. Oh, no. You're coming to the UK, Matt.
Oh, dude, I will disagree. There's so much damn incredible food in the UK. You just got to research. Same in the States, man. Go to a random spot in a strip mall, you're going to be eating garbage food. But if you do some research, we've had some of the best meals of our life in the UK. Truly, like typically American bands always slag Europe and the UK for the food, but it's because they're not looking. You gotta do your research. I research a lot beforehand. But back to the Co's, back to nostalgia. I do see a lot of bands do it, but I feel like 20 years, we've always said to amongst ourselves, like, hey, 20 years is a milestone. Things before that, I'm not sure. Like, I don't think like a 10-year record for us would we go, hey, here, we're gonna go do a whole record now. And I think that because of the impact that Poison had and Ascendancy had, that 20 years is just maximized, you know, being the right record at the right time. And I think it's a very exciting time for heavy music. There's so many great heavy bands, and kind of like the poppier side is heavy bands, the extreme side, and everyone seeming to embrace everything and lift everything up. Bullet and Trivium both came from much more, I think, exclusory times, much more, you know, intense times where that wasn't really a thing. And again, those are some of the fires that sharpened the two blades of what our bands are that made us realize how similar we are and why we could do this together.
Well, yeah, as you said there, like 05 was like a weird time for subgenres and stuff, really, because I think like you know, emo was kind of big thing. I think My Chemical Romance were really becoming like the big band in alternative music at the time. And as soon as like heavy side of it, you know, we just come out of the new metal phase of it being in pop culture. I'm sure you guys found it weird, like where you sit. I mean, there's loads of different elements within your music that kind of helped out in certain ways, I'm sure. But as far as like metal in 2005, it must have been nice to see a select few of you trying to do similar things, including yourselves, but like, yeah, not really being able to fit in to a certain whatever was going on.
It was so weird for us. I mean, around 2005, let's take the UK out of the equation, talk about every other territory, every other band. We were always too metal for the hardcore kids, too hardcore for the metal kids. Ascendancy, I mean, there's some stuff that's as technical as like early death records, like Human and Individual Thought Patterns. But because I had the swoopy hair and the eyeliner and the girl's pants on, they're like, no, this is an emo band. But I always liked playing with people's perceptions, you know, when we did In Waves of like, what's the opposite of a music video? Let's have no performance. What's the opposite of a documentary? Let's have no color. So like we always get play with the opposites. And after Ascendancy was successful, I said, what's the exact opposite of Ascendancy? Let's make that record next. Even though this record was just wildly successful, people liked it. I think it's important to push the boundaries of yourself and push the boundaries of like what's perceived around and everything. And I think that's what's created the longevity for our bands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a weird time, but you know, musically it was such a transitional period for rock, heavy metal, the whole genre of what we do. You know, like you said, there was a lot of stuff going on. There was a lot of residual new metal stuff. The emo thing was huge. This new wave of heavy metal was breaking through with bands like us and Killswitch and Avenged, and you know, that it just felt like that was kind of thriving as well. And yeah, I don't think Trivium and Bullet have ever belonged in a certain pigeonhole. It's not really what we were or still are to this day. You know, I think, you know, as a songwriter, I find it nothing more boring than trying to repeat something that you've done, even though it was successful. You know, it was never something I was interested in. You know, and I think kind of discography of Bullet, you know, you can see that if you write it down on paper and describe each album, they're very, very different from each other, you know?
Yeah.
And I like that, you know, I like being creatively brave, creatively kind of stimulated. And regardless of where that goes, as long as myself and the boys are proud of what we've done and what we released, we stand by it, you know, and that's the attitude we've had. And it's stood us very, very well. But the 2005 thing, yeah, it was a very weird year, and, the stars aligned for us musically, as it did for the Trivium boys. And we didn't have to fit into anything, you know, it was just kind of, I think that whole kind of chaos of what was happening in the genre of rock and metal actually played into our benefits, you know, because people didn't judge it. They just kind of accepted it. We had our first set share of bullshit for many years. You know, people fucking either loved us or hated us. And, you know, I fucking loved that. You know, I loved it.
Yeah. It's always better to have an extreme reaction. Yeah.
Yeah. Man, I loved people ragging on us. It was great. You know, it's like, yeah.
You don't want ambivalence. You don't want someone to be like, eh, you want hate or love. And that's a good thing. And that's why we're still standing here.
But yeah, that's how it gets passed around, because people are either going, you need to check out this band, I love them, or, oh, don't check this band out, they fucking suck. And then you go,
and let me see
how much it sucks. And you're like, I fucking love it. This fucking idiot.
Yeah.
I'm the same.
Do you remember any of the smallest little details people would pick on negatively about you guys? Like, why are they going on about this? Like, of all things.
Dude. Massively. I've had some of my favorite bands in the world bully me to my face about how much they think our band sucks. I remember we did a tour where my voice was messing up. It was squeaking during stage. I had to walk through the headlining band's restroom, who I grew up with, their posters in my room. They're making that same voice squeak at my face laughing.
Oh.
I mean, dude, like the list can go on. I can write a freaking book. But the point is it's not like woe is me about that. That was the fires that we had to walk through. Both the tour bands had to walk through a lot of shit. And that's why 20 years after our seminal records, we're able to go do a tour that's going to sell out around the world because we survived it. And I don't want new bands to have to experience it. Like, I'll talk to new bands, I'll share some of my stories. Like, the first time we toured San Francisco, I was telling another band we were on tour with recently. It was Children of Bodom headlining, us direct support, and a Monomarth opening. And we're playing Slims to like 400 people sold out. We were spit on and booed at the entire show. because what? We had our drum kit was really big. So they had the Amon drummer playing our drum kit. So the crowd didn't like that, which was kind of strange. Maybe they should have moved the kit. I don't know. But they also hated us because we're talking about Children of Bodom and Amon Amarth. You know, Amon Amarth is like a massive band. Now Children of Bodom became a massive band. But things like that, again, I could write a book. But I think because we had to survive that, we're still standing here. We're stronger than ever.
That's mad, though. That's crazy to hear that even dude, now.
Bullied by bands, crews. Like, the list goes on, man. Oh, fuck yeah. It was bad. It was bad times. Bad times. Oh. But we kept doing it.
Just because you didn't have a front of a boat on a kick drum, like.
Well, I mean, not even just that. Yeah, not even just that, man. It was come the on, list just on goes on. Goes on and on, man. Goes on.
Oh, wow. Hey, maybe you should think about writing that book, because it would sell. It probably wouldn't be great to revisit, but it would sell.
If I could if I could name names and band names, it would sell well, but I'd be ostracized again.
That'd be good. That'd be good. Come on. Let's fucking clean this scene up. Fucking let's start again. Fuck it. Oh, that is a book. Oh, yeah. Let me know when you're thinking about going live with the GoFundMe for that book. Because I am fucking in there. Yeah.
I'll start the new Perez Hilton starring Matt Hafey.
Yeah, TMZ, TVM, TV, like Trivium. You could do like a your own channel.
Oh, man. I mean, I'm thinking about even Ozfest. Some of the bands we were on, they would come on our bus and just start ripping on us, ragging on us, just saying like every single word you could imagine you should not be saying today. Fuck? Right to our face. Yeah, to our dressing room. Like, bands coming into our dressing room saying that stuff. But the headliner, so what are we going to do? You know, like,
murder someone. I don't.
At that time, you know, we're like 18, 19. So stuff like that happens to either of us now, either of our bands now. We're not going to take that. But
yeah.
You fucking stick him in a rear naked choke these days, man.
Yes.
Stick him, like, get a fucking arm. Get a fucking nice arm bar and snap that fucking arm in half.
I would love to. I'd love to.
Uncle, pick this James Hetfield.
Yeah. No, it wasn't James Hetfield. No, imagine.
Yeah, that was madness that came from my brain. I'm sorry about that.
Imagine.
Yeah, how long do you reckon? Yeah, how long do you reckon it would take you to tap James Hetfield out? Can't be that long.
I mean, if someone doesn't know jujitsu, then it's like you don't roll with people that don't do jujitsu. I did just train with Matt the Immortal Brown from the UFC last Friday.
He's
been buddies with me for years. I sent him a guitar of mine. I taught him get some guitar stuff. He's like, hey, I'm in Orlando. I'm like, let's train. I've been wanting to conquer fears lately. That's why I climbed the O2. Deathly fear of heights. Deathly fear of roller coasters. Did roller coasters last week with my wife. And I was like, I'm going to grapple with a pro fighter. And it was freaking sick. I'm hurting in parts of my soul I didn't know that existed, but it was amazing.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. Yeah, Matt Brown. Wow.
Got to conquer some fears.
Yeah, he's a fucking genuine killer. Well, not 100%.
He's a killer.
But yeah, he's a killer in the UFC game. I didn't want to out him just in case he's murdered anybody. And
he's a monster, man. Monster, yeah. Amazing guy.
That's awesome. Yeah,
awesome. Well, yeah, Hefe UFC debut on the card.
I don't like striking. I don't like striking.
He'd be the new CM Punk all over again.
He train jiu-jitsu?
Did he fucking train anything? I mean, he turned up twice and got fucking handed his ass twice.
The next one I'm hoping to train with is Baron Corbin. He lives close to me, and he's like, hey, let's roll. I was like, let's do it, man. Let's go.
Yes, nice.
He's like a little kid, but he's large. He's a large
coffee
man.
And meat. Yeah, he's a big fan of meat and large stuff as well, isn't he? Yeah.
Yep.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Oh, I love these crossovers. I absolutely love these crossovers.
Yeah, never expecting WWE UFC metal crossovers. It's not, hey, it's not enough for that. Yeah.
Gotta do it.
Well, guys, as we start winding down on this conversation a little bit, super appreciate the time you've taken. But a couple other things I wanted to mention is, like, you know, we've talked about the impact of these two records in particular, and not to make you guys feel old, but I'm sure there's so many young bands in the scenes these days who constantly say that Poison or Ascendancy were either some of their first records or some of their gateway into kind of heavier music or just being their favorite bands. Like, when you have those conversations, what is it like for you? As much as it must be like, oh, you used to listen to me in high school? How old am I? It must be so cool to see that, like, these albums were a DNA blueprint for so many people and just made them pick up a guitar, made them want to scream, or made them want to try their luck at music.
Yeah, it's something that you don't think about when you're starting the journey, you know, but as time and albums have progressed, And now we're at kind of this time. Yeah, meet and greets, little social events, that kind of stuff. There's not one that goes by where someone doesn't mention that specific album. You know, others get mentioned too, but you know, they say that, you know, The Poison was the soundtrack to their teenage years. You're the reason why I'm in a band. You're the reason, you know, it's just like, it feels great, man. It's again, like I said, it's not something that you expect when you start in your journey yourself, you know? But I totally understand how it feels because I was there when my journey started and I got into events where I could go up to my peers and say that exact same thing to them, like the Metallica guys, you know what I mean? It's like, it's just a crazy thing. And it's just, yeah, it hits home the impact it has. You know, and that's all I can really say about it. It's just, it feels great. It feels very humbling. Yeah. And it's, you know, a lot of people don't experience and will never experience what it's like to leave something behind when you're not there anymore, you know, but if you're in the creative aspect, the creative world, art, music, that kind of stuff, something that will live far beyond your demise, you know, it's kind of a mad feeling. And, you know, we're not there yet. But
sounds like a song title, Far Beyond Your Demise.
Ooh.
I like that.
Yeah. You can have it. It's yours, Matt.
Well, can we not sort out a Trivium Bullet collaboration like right now under that song title, and then you do that on the tour, and then, you know, we don't get anything.
We'll kick your royalties.
No, I didn't want anything for it. Just a nod. Just
you know what?
That'll do.
Challenge accepted, Mr. Smith.
Right, here we go.
Challenge accepted.
Yes, the first song created off the back of something. Oh my God!
You're on lead vocals though, Sean.
Oh, I'm up for it. I'm in.
We have to get a sapping call out in there though.
I was going to say, please do a metal sapping scream mid song or something or beginning of the song.
What the fuck is sapping? Yeah. We just start like that. Yeah, we're on it already. Yeah, Morg, if you leave us now, Morg, we'll just go straight to a writing session.
I can't play tambourine on the background, can I?
I've seen you playing tambourine. You're fucking useless. Leave it.
Morgan, back to your point, though. Yeah, it's been nuts seeing all these bands that we love, bands that we're fans of, we'll go up to and say, hey, we love what you do. And later on, they'll be like, oh, man, that Bullet Trivium tour, that's my high school. I remember Josh from Malevolence was saying that. The dudes from Orbit Culture told me that, like, I grew up on your two bands. Ryujin's main guy, Rio, said the same thing. He's like, what got me into metal was Bullet and Trivium. And that's amazing to see. Even my comment section, I'll see like the dudes from Vex saying like, oh, we grew up listening to your two bands. I love that so much. Bands that I'm a genuine fan of listen to our bands back then. Maybe we inspired them to pick something up. And that's like the biggest reward you could ever ask for.
Yeah, it really is.
And obviously on this tour, you're playing some absolutely huge venues that you're so excited about. But you guys have been in the scene for so long, I'm sure you've played places that when you look back is a bit like, wait, what was used as a venue? So we always ask some guests every now and again, the weirdest place they've ever played. I'm sure the two of you must have like...
I'll go first. My one was, I once supported Linkin Park in a bullring in Madrid.
Wow.
Beat that.
Nice.
Beat the Theater of Death.
Wow.
I don't know.
Other than Bridgendreck, Matt.
That's really fucking weird.
There's a lot, but I'm trying to think of a really good one.
Yeah, I don't think weird has crept into mine, to be honest. Like shitholes.
Yeah, lots of those.
Loads of them. I remember on our first tour in America, actually, this is a good one. I'm just going to hate me for this. we played, like, we were second on a 5-band bill. It was our first ever tour of the States, and we were playing kind of shady, shitty shitholes. And there was one stage that we played, and it was such a shithole that in the stage was a huge hole, and they didn't even put any bit of fluorescent tape. Like, there was nothing. It was just like, that's a hole. Don't fall into it. Paj didn't get the memo. And, he kind of ran across the stage, put one in it. It went down about a foot. It was a big hole.
Ooh.
And he basically face planted into the stage with the guitar as well. We laughed.
Oh, I bet.
Was that Syracuse? Because I fell through a hole on a stage in Syracuse.
It may have been. It was a shithole. It was like a divey old crappy little bar kind of club thing. And yeah, man, Barky hit the floor. He was louder than the PA when he hit the deck. You know what I mean? It was kind of that slap. And of course we did what any band would do, we just pointed and fucking laughed.
It's literally all you can do. Oh, that's fucking brilliant.
We played a Roman Coliseum with Megadeth and Carpenter Brute a couple months ago, like in December.
Yeah, you win.
But that one, like, I was called over by Mustaine's tech. They're like, hey, I met Dave needs to talk to you. I was like, oh, what happened? He comes up, he's like, hey, how much of the Megadeth set do you know? He hands me a set list. I was like, a couple songs? Can you learn as much as you can? My voice isn't working. So I started cramming the hour between changeover to learn the Megadeth set, had the lyrics printed out, had the click tracks going, singing with them in their jam room. I was waiting side stage for them to call me out because he's like, he always can do a couple songs. But his voice got better, so he didn't need me. So he called me up for Chain of Souls. I did one song and it was off. But I was like so nervous the whole set. I was just waiting. I was like, I'm going to go up.
I mean, how bad can Dave's voice be anyways?
You know, I did ask him. I was like, Dave, can I do your voice? Will you mind if I do it? He's like, no, you have to. So I was going to do the hello, me, meet the real me. Yeah, he said, go for it. I was so excited. I didn't get to do it. I was so excited.
I once got to do Fred Durst's voice to Fred Durst. And I was... Yeah, what's going on? Yeah, it's one of the weirdest moments of my life. I spent 3 minutes singing a Limp Bizkit song, doing Fred Durst at Fred Durst.
That's awesome.
And yeah, it was awesome, but it was very, very strange.
How did you like that?
Well, we did it in the sound check, because basically what happened was the Blackout got invited to go on tour with Limp Bizkit. We jumped at the chance, despite we knew we were going to lose a lot of money doing it. We did it. We got 12 shows in. I wrote a letter. Dear Limp Bizkit, the Blackout Duo, you might remember us from the last 11 shows. We've never seen you play the Rock Mosh Anthem, Counterfeit Live. Is there any chance you do it, even in soundcheck? No worries if not. Thanks for the show. Love the Blackout. Give it to Fred's security guard, who's a big fella. Must have given it to Fred. And then we had a knock on our dressing room door saying, Limp Bizkit would like to see you downstairs. And we were like, oh, we're being kicked off the tour for being cheeky cunts. Oh no, this is going to be dreadful. And we walked downstairs, and as I got there, Fred was like, we'll do the song. He said it, he did it in a Welsh accent. He went, all right, but what's going to happen is, right, we're going to do the song, but you got to sing it.
That's so sick.
Yeah, and he said, the old man TV is down there. So in his monitor setup in the front, he's got a queue. And he went, the old man TV is down there. And I did the most 12-year-old virgin thing you could ever do. I stepped over it, looked him in the face and said, I was born to do this, Fred. Like a big loser. Yeah. And then I did an impression of him for 4 minutes. And then after it, he said, don't get too drunk after your set because we're going to do that song tonight and you were going to do it with us.
Oh, that's fucking amazing. I've always heard he's such a cool guy. I've always heard he's so cool.
You got your wish, man. You got your wish.
Oh, yeah. It was literally. Yeah, 16-year-old Sean was doing a massive jizz like on stage. It was fucking brilliant.
That record is so, $3 Bill. $3 Bill is so good. Such an incredible album. Incredible.
Yeah, man. It's so raw.
The first six songs, fantastic. Oh, this is another thing. We were playing out the Blackout, a song called Spread Legs, Not Lies. And we said to Sam Rivers from Limp Bizkit, we were like, how can we not play in much of $3 Bill? And he's like, well, you're already playing Pollution. And we were like, oh, he must have watched us because now he knows that we've ripped off Pollution with our song Spread Legs, Not Lies. Shit! Fantastic experience. They were all lovely to us. I thought he was going to be a cunt. And he could have been a cunt and we would have thanked him. I would have licked his feet for it because if it wasn't for Fred Durst, we wouldn't be having this conversation now because I wouldn't be into the music I'm into.
Yeah, they're what a phenomenal band. I saw them for the first time in years last August. They played Gunnersbury here in London.
I saw you with Pendulum.
Yeah.
So I went there to do that Pendulum thing and then Limp Bizkit, so I got to see it. Fuck me, I've never seen a crowd so wild.
Amazing, man. Amazing.
Like, so for good. Any of the hardest metal band ever, step aside, Limp Bizkit. When Limp Bizkit were on the stage, the crowd, fuck me, it was wild.
They're the only band we've ever supported who I've watched every performance every night. And they would get about 5 songs in every night and you'd be like, all right, cool, they're done now, Ed. And then they play another 10 songs that any rock club would go fucking mental for. It's unbelievable. What a band. And they were lovely. It didn't have to be lovely, but yeah, well done, Durst and the boys.
This is the Limp Bizkit section of the podcast, everyone.
Yeah, sorry, boys. Sorry,
no, we super appreciate you guys taking the time to do this, but I just want to leave with one last question before you go. I mean, look, again, talked about the impact of these records, and there's so many people so excited to just be hearing all these songs again live in the flesh. I would like the two of you to give me 2 songs, if you could. One from your own album that you're excited to play. maybe don't get the chance to that much, maybe to think it hasn't got the attention some of the others deserved. And a song off the Others album that you're looking forward to see them play every night.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. I'll go first. I'd say Declaration off Ascendancy, the final track off that record. Love that one. Don't get to play it often. It's super fast, super aggressive, lots of parts. And I cannot wait to see Suffocating by Bullet every night. That is my first Bullet song I ever heard, my favorite Bullet song. I got to have Matt teach me the song. I love it. It has all the staples and the signatures of what Bullet sounds like. Can't wait to see it every night.
Nice.
There you go. Probably the song that is going to resonate hardest for me off the Poison is probably 10 Years Today. People that don't know what that song is about, it was about kind of one of our very close friends in our friend network back in like 1994, 95. And unfortunately, one of our friends thought it would be a moment of madness, and he took his own life. So the song was written on the anniversary of his death. It's a song that we haven't played a lot. We've probably played it about 5 times in its entirety since it was written. So to play that in the setting we're going to be playing it in front of all the people in the venues we're going to be playing it in, I think that's going to be the song that I'm going to be emotionally most looking forward to playing. And then for the Trivium Boys, I've said it numerous times, my favorite song off that album, even though there's many, it's the song that kind of started it all for me, and it's Rain. I just think it's just a class heavy metal opener for an album. It's got everything you want. Got the riffs, got the speed, the technicality, the stabs. It's just metal, heavy metal, modern heavy metal at its finest.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Awesome stuff. Well, guys, again, thank you so much. We're so excited for this tour. Again, Cardiff on my birthday. So thank you for making it easy for me to plan the night out, because it's already happening. But no, guys, obviously, like, just very excited for all. And thanks for taking the time, and thanks for sharing so many cool stories and just looking back at some mad, mad times.
Thank you so much, guys. Great to see you guys. Thank you.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you very much to everyone out there for all the positivity around this tour. You know, it has been very, very, very overwhelming. Tickets have flown. And for people that are listening to this that are not in the UK, be patient. There's going to be news coming month by month for where you live. We're taking this worldwide, baby. Let's go.
Hell yeah. Thank you guys so much. Thanks, guys. Sorry again about the time thing. Sorry about my America.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Yes! Woo! Tidy, tidy, tidy. And then to follow the Welsh phrase, tidy. Get that down to Matt Effie. If Matt Effie doesn't say tidy or Sapnin in Cardiff, he is banned from this podcast. And when I see him, I will fight him to the death in jiu-jitsu, which I have never, ever trained. But how hard can it be? Just get up in it. When someone starts doing jiu-jitsu, do you just get up?
you do know he's like pretty trained and all that, right? You know he's like,
listen, he knows what to he's the doing. Words coming out of my mouth. Just get up. That's it. You defeat jiu-jitsu. I've seen Derek Lewis doing it from the UFC. You can't be armed by conventional jiu-jitsu because just get up. Hey, Matt, if you listen to this, I'm very sorry. I was only joking. I know jiu-jitsu's fucking class and you will absolutely body me. So, yeah, that was a joke. And yes, I can't believe he fought fucking UFC legend Matt Brown. Absolutely nuts. You know, I'm probably a little bit tougher than Matt Brown, but... You know, fair play to him. He's had a go at one of the UFC guys. Me next. No, I'm joking. Sorry to anybody who's learning jiu-jitsu. Please don't fucking ankle pick me at a fucking gig and then break my leg. I don't need that. I know you're all solid because I could tell by your weird years.
You're just digging yourself a hole here. Worst comes to worst, Karate Kid, sweep the leg.
Sweep the fucking leg. Don't grab my leg and then break my ankle, though. Just let me kick you. Let me do that weird crane kick he does in that first. I haven't seen the second one with, what's Willow's brother's name? Jaden. Yeah, I haven't seen the other.
Jaden Smith.
Yeah, I haven't seen the recent Karate Kid, which was probably about 10 years ago now.
There you are. There's a Karate Kid tangent. I'm looking forward to the Trivium Bullet Satmin song that's hopefully going to happen at some point.
It's got to happen now, hasn't it? Bless, tag at Matt Tuck. I don't know what his fucking social, at Mr. Matt Tuck, something like that. Anyway, tag Matt Tuck, Matt Efi, Matt K. Efi, and myself in stuff saying, when's this song coming? Because we should make this a thing now. We should definitely make this a thing. I should appear with one of the bands at these shows. Please.
Hey, manifesting. Sometimes it happens. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out somehow. But, you know, it's always special when we get to do episodes like this where we can get, like, something a little bit different. Like, as I said earlier, we've had both of them on separately, get them on together and see how much their friendship has grown over the years, how much the parallels between the bands and how excited for this tour they are is just incredible. So very, very thankful that we got to do this. And yeah, tickets for the Poisoned Ascendancy Tour 2025 is selling stupidly fast. Go and get your tickets now. It starts on January the 26th in Cardiff. That's completely sold out. And heads to Glasgow, Manchester, Birmingham, and finishes at London's O2 Arena on the 2nd of February.
Loaded's O2 Arena. Loaded, the magazine is back. And they bought the arena. Fair play to them. Who'd have thought, like, tits in the 90s could get you an arena. Who'd have thought, like? But yes, it's going to be a hell of a tour. Make sure you get tickets as soon as you can. I saw Jamie Mateus, the bassist of Bullet for Valentine, Friday at Soz's father's funeral. I know I haven't previously mentioned it, but his father passed away during the blackout shows. And I just want to say my love to Soz and his family. But yeah, I was talking to Jamie Mateus at the gig. And yes, he's very, very excited for it. And the whole world should be excited for this tour. The whole world. I've said too much.
Let us know you're listening to this at Sapling Pod on Instagram. Put it in the stories. We can share it. Tell a friend. Comment about it. Two metal icons together with two absolute idiots. That's us, by the way. We're not metal legends. I don't know if I'd be considered metal at all. I'm too emo for all this. Anyway, and if you'd like to support us in any single way, head over to patreon.com/sapling. Over there, not only do we get a load of bonuses and exclusives, get to find out who our guests are before anyone else, but you get involved in a whole community of the best people on planet Earth. They're meeting up with each other at gigs, at festivals, just day-to-day life, giving each other gifts. It's all absolutely wholesome to see. So if you'd like to get involved, patreon.com/sapning. Head to the description of this and every episode. There's loads of names there that we thank. But as always, Sean's going to give a mahoosive shout out to the elite members of our Patreon community. Those are the people in the top tiers.
Yes, I've never met such an amazing giving community who support each other. Like Morgan said, they do present sharing. So they give each other presents. They're constantly a source of positivity for each other. And the odd member's giving the odd member a blowjob. Anyway, we've got couples in there, haven't we? So there's bound to have been some sort of fellatio gone on.
Fucking hell.
Anyway, thank you very much, Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi, Janelle Carson, Paul Hirschfield, Tony Michael, Scarlett Charlton, Dilly, Califragilistic, Expelled Grimwood. Thank you for coming to the gig the other day. Raiders played in Northampton. It was fun. Thank you very much, Mitch Perry, Nathan Croshaw, Liam Connolly, Molly Malloy, and James Bowerbank, Amy Louise, Kat Besson, Kieran Lewis, Alexandra Pemberton, Jonathan Gutierrez, Jenny Robinson, Amy Dawson, Murray Grimwood, pick it up, Scott Jones, Stuart McNaught, Ellen Southfield, Caroline Robinson, Stephen Aston, Kate Patak, Jenny Munster, Louis Cook, Carl Pendlebury, James McNaught, Martina McManus, Jason Heredia, John and Emma, Danny Eaton, Ra 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 Ra, it's too many Ra's, James, Sean Vines, Evan, just one name, he's like Prince, Thomas O'Neill, Ollie Amesby, Patreon of Sapling Podcast with El Carl, President of the World 2025. We have crushed that. She is like Joseph Coney of 2012. We have found him and we have taken him out. Dan Peregrine, Emily Perry, Kalila Keane, Adam King of the Ghost Pass, or Josh, what do you call a constipated detective? No shit, Sherlock, Crisp. Thank you very much. Vicky, Laura Russell, Pip at Life Garden Band, who I checked out the other day. I quite liked. So that was clever, wasn't it? Fraser Cummins, Sophie Ansell, Lavender Lee Martin, Harry, Kyle, I Can't Die versus Raiders Rematch Smith. I would like that very much. Check out I Can't Die, Elba Band, and last but no means Connor Lewins and family.
Woo! We love every single person in there very, very much. Thank you for existing, and thank you for making this exist every single week. We couldn't do it without you, literally. Before we go, I want to give a big shout out to the touring party of Skindred. This past week, I went to see them play the Wembley Arena. Big gig there. Big gig.
Do you know what? Absolutely fucking unbelievable. There is no band that deserves a Wembley Arena show that went like theirs did more than Skindred. What a fucking band. What a fucking atmosphere. What a gig. Tell us a little bit more.
POD blew my mind. Finally getting to see new metal legends. And I just wanted to take a moment.
There you go.
Felt so alive. Wanted to give a shout out to As Everything Unfolds, because they started the gig and it was so amazing to see them have that opportunity of getting to go and say hello Wembley and getting their dues. One of the bands I think don't get enough attention as they should. But what has happened since this gig is Benji from Skindred didn't say give it up for As Everything Unfolds.
Oh, no.
He said, give it up for Charlie and the Boys. And now Charlie is trying to make sure that this is a running joke. So I'm trying to help that a little
Charlie
bit.
Charlie and the Boys.
So under everything they post, I reckon we should just go Satman and Charlie and the Boys.
It's Charlie and the Boys. But yes, congratulations to them. Fucking love me some POD. And again, Skindred, the ultimate fucking party band. If you missed that gig, sucks to be you. Tidy. Sapnin!
Sapnin!
That's a weird end, isn't it? It's positive, like, but it just kind of came out of nowhere.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.